Some listeners may be offended by the content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Spotcast Season 3, Episode 19, Stardate 985-43-MARK-57. My name is Tim Mitra. I'm in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there.
We have Jaime Lopez Jr. on the line in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
How's it going? How's it going indeed?
It is Disney Plus-tastic.
Is it Disney Plus-tastic? Alrighty. 80.
80.
No, season 3.
I know it pales 19. Next to you guys in your crazy...
321?
Yeah, exactly.
But who's counting? Yeah.
So does that mean you've done like 500 podcasts, Tim?
Personally?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done 100 with Tammy and 100 and something with Tammy and almost 100 with you. Or 100 minus 2 with you, I think. Lots of podcasts. Yeah, and it's like, you know, what is 6 years worth of podcasting experience get you? Nothing. It's you, nothing. I mean, there's people out there who know who I am, but that's about it, right? Alrighty. It's not like, and podcasting isn't seen as real journalism yet, or so I hear.
Well, only when it's subsidized by a real journalistic organization, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like most of the podcasts that are out there, the big names are like, you know, people who rolled off of TV and radio and, you know, and book writing. Like Malcolm Gladwell and those kind of guys. You know? Mm-hmm. Not too shabby. Well, let's get the fact check out of the way so we can get to the headlines. We were talking about Murray Martin last week, who was the star, who played Peter Pan on Broadway, I think, and a few other places like that. But I've forgotten that we also had a Sound of Music soundtrack album, and, you know, much to my surprise, it wasn't Julie Andrews singing, it was Mary Martin singing. She must have played Maria on stage in Broadway as well, I guess. And I said Albert somebody or other was the old man in Chico and the Man. It was actually played by Jack Albertson, played the man on Chico and the Man with Freddie Prinze. But he was also probably known to you guys as Grandpa on the original Gene Wilder Willy Wonka.
Oh, yeah, now yeah, I know
yeah.
who it is.
Yeah, now you know who it is. Now you know. All right. So the moment Jonathan's been waiting for, the headlines and the top story today is Disney, despite what we were saying the other day, is set to reveal tons of movies. Turbocharging streaming offerings is what it says here. And so I posted a story and Jonathan posted the follow-up story. So basically, yeah, it's like, you know, we were sort of, you know, ready to get, you know, make the casket for the Star Wars franchise, but apparently we were a little premature.
Yeah, that's they definitely decided to stick it to us today, but I am grateful for them to doing it on a recording day as opposed to waiting till the day after, right. Which is usually our luck.
And of course Tom Hanks is Geppetto, because Tom Hanks is Geppetto.
Yeah, of course he is.
I don't know. Do you think so? Really?
Sure.
Okay.
So right. we're talking about the fact that they Disney Plus and Disney overall announced they're going to be doing just a massive amount of Star Wars, Marvel and other content, some of which is ending up on their streaming platform and some of it is ending up in the movie theaters. But it is just a whack load of announcements today and like really, really meaty stuff with stars up the yin yang. Like, this is just crazy. Mm-hmm. So we got Star Wars Ahsoka starring Rosario Dawson. We got Star Wars Rangers of the New Republic, which is again supposed to be set in that same time frame as Mandalorian. We got a Star Wars event series based around Lando, which I haven't seen the details. I don't know if they've confirmed that that's Donald Glover.
Right.
They've firmed up the Cassian Andor series, the Obi-Wan Kenobi series we knew about. Star Wars A Droid Story is also coming. Star Wars The Acolyte, that's the series we talked about before, that's going to be female-led and female-starring.
And Star Wars and the Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah, really. Star Wars Visions. Now, this one sounds really cool. Star Wars Visions is apparently an anime take on Star Wars. That'll be really interesting. And they also announced a new theatrical movie directed by Patty Jenkins, Star Wars Rogue Squadron. And then they decided they would double down on that by announcing their Marvel slate. So they announced The Fantastic Four is coming to the MCU. They announced...
Again?
Yeah, they announced, well, for the first time to the actual MCU, hopefully the first time right. Mm. They announced the third Ant-Man movie, which is going to be called Quantumania, an I Am Groot TV series, the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special, Armor Wars starring Don Cheadle as War Machine, Ironheart, which is a spinoff from Iron Man. It's about a character that they've introduced in the comics called Riri Williams, who is another armored superhero. Secret Invasion, which is the long-rumored Nick Fury series. They doubled down and confirmed the Moon Knight series that had been talked about with Oscar Isaacs. Tatiana Maslany, the lying person she is, was confirmed as She-Hulk. And then Hawkeye, they announced, we knew we were getting a Hawkeye series, but we know now that Hailee Steinfeld, very, very popular young actress, is going to be Kate Bishop, the understudy Hawkeye. And we got Captain Marvel 2 on top of that. Oh, and they also announced the, confirmed the Willow series and the whole slate of new Disney proper stuff, including Pinocchio, as Jaime mentioned last week. And they also revealed more Pixar content and Turner and Hooch reboot. And man, it is just a content-o-rama.
So this begs the question, Jaime, now how much would you pay?
Will you pay?
Yeah, is it all coming out between December 15th January 15th? Is this a huge deal for me? As we record here, it is the 10th, so it's a few days before I will join Disney Plus, binge the heck out of most of the first two seasons of Mandalorian so that I can watch the only episode I will ever see, apparently, that's not spoiled for me, Mandalorian, on Friday the 18th. And then that gives me just enough time to watch Mulan and Hamilton so that by the final day of my 1 month subscription, I will see the premiere episode of WandaVision on January 15th. So
and you'll like it so much, you'll come back for more.
This is really an impressive amount of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they just made staying home cool. Like this, yeah. It just reversed the pandemic. I was going to stay home and watch all this stuff anyways. It's it is a staggering amount of content. It really is. I'm honestly surprised. I mean, I know that they were doing this. Apparently, they made the announcement today at a shareholders event, but it is amazing how much content they dropped in one sort of go. Obviously, we'd known about some of this stuff. We knew they were going to do a Moon Knight series and a She-Hulk series, and some of this stuff was in the offing, but holy moly, did they ever just bowl us over. I mean, I made the comment to my wife earlier, this is the number one streaming service. This is it. Like, this just, obviously, it still has to roll it out, so people like Jaime may want to wait until it gets to a certain tipping point, but there is a future, and a not distant future, where every week, there will be a new episode of something that you will want to watch. They will have either a Marvel series or a Star Wars series or some other Disney exclusive that you're going to want to watch, and they'll do that 52 weeks a year because they're Disney.
Yeah, and it's interesting too. I was just noticing too, like it used to be 10 years ago, you would say, you'd watch something and they'd say, "And follow us on Facebook," and then, you know, then it came, "Check out our app," right? And now, I've watched at least two or three commercials during the broadcast of Start or Discovery this evening that said now streaming at the end of, you know, trailers, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the new Bryan Cranston series on HBO Max and Crave in Canada. Mm-hmm. And what's the other one? The one with Hayley Cuoco.
The stewardess? The flight attendant?
Yeah. That one's also, and they both end with now streaming on HBO Max, right? So it's sort of the new, I think that's, they've confirmed that that's where it is. And, you know, I'm seeing more and more masks on TV and, you know, social distancing on TV. And, you know, so I think it's confirmed that this is now a lasting thing, right?
Yeah. The only thing they didn't announce is the Black Widow, right? They didn't say anything about Black Widow today. So that was the one thing we were kind of waiting for the shoe to drop on, was, are they going to start moving their huge $1 billion blockbuster films to their streaming service? And the answer so far is no. You'd think if they were going to do it, they'd have done it today.
Right. Well, that said, I think in 5 days, Tenet comes out on Blu-ray, right? So.
And streaming, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, it's kind of that's where we are, right?
Yeah, and if only we could get Warner Brothers to wake up and put their stuff on streaming here in Canada, we'd be all set.
Yeah, this will be interesting because it's you know, on paper it's very powerful, because the big knock on Disney Plus has been, oh, it's great with the massive back catalog, right? It's hard to get the kind of back catalog quality and quantity that Disney just happens to own.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, oh, oh, cool. So other than Mandalorian and like occasional things like Mulan, occasional things like Hamilton, what else are you going to watch? And it seems like they've turned the battleship around and they've got all the guns ready to fire as they've finally just gotten the plan in place. If they can execute on it, I think it will definitely be one of the, if not the top streaming service everybody be talking about.
Yep.
It will be challenging because Mandalorian has gotten so much love out of the community that everything will be measured against Mandalorian.
Yep.
And it kind of makes me wonder in a very particular way, do we have any info about, okay, young Lando, but where in the timeline for him? Because I really liked Phoebe Waller-Bridge's character, L337, the droid, who is gone, spoilers, at the end of Solo, right?
Mm-hmm. But then she is the Falcon now, too, so maybe there's some way to spin that.
Right, right. Possible. So definitely really exciting. Now, how much would you pay is an interesting one, which I've said, like, hey, well, that's your problem as a streaming service, right? Convince me to pay. CBS All Access found a really good way to get me to pay for, what, like 6 months? I was like, oh, cool. We've got all these Star Trek series lined up that you want to watch. Cool. If there's a whole bunch of Marvel and a whole bunch of Star Wars series that I want to watch, yeah, I will throw my pennies down for them.
Yeah. I didn't see it, but I see in some of the pictures from the event, the other names that they had up on the board behind them, they mentioned the Willow series in there. The Indiana Jones logo is up on that stage behind them, but I haven't seen anything about Indiana Jones today. Did you guys see anything about that?
No.
So, I mean, geez, talking about double down if they want to go with that, right?
Hmm.
But yeah, it's, it says right here, Harrison Ford to reprise Indiana Jones role for fifth and final movie, July 2022.
Yeah, I think the one thing we may have talked about in this show was Disney reorganizing its internal departments so that the content production had absolutely nothing to do with distribution. Whereas before, it was like, all right, cool. Like, this is the project that is doing Black Widow, and we want this to be in distributed as a movie, so we're building it with movie ideas in mind, right? And just follow the whole thing. And instead, they reorganize and say, no, content, you go decide how to make good content, and totally different people will figure out how are we distributing it, right? So that they're like, all right, well, this movie, it would make more sense to put out in theaters, or this movie, it would make more sense to make that a streaming exclusive.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happened here with them. And it's pretty well timed, given what we talked about with HBO, that like a pandemic is a really good time to have tons of content on your streaming service. Yep. And just say, all right, bite the bullet and call it good and say, forget it. We might be able to put some stuff out in theaters internationally, but one of the biggest markets in the United States is very clearly not going to be certain to be in an okay spot COVID-wise through 2021.
Yeah.
I think it was a really, really good reorganization to say, all right, instead of, the head of this movie has decided that they really don't want to miss their bonus, so they're going to do whatever they can to put it in theaters, and oh no, it's a terrible idea. It's like, no, your job is to create content, and your job over here is to figure out how to distribute and make the most money.
Yeah, and so this was a stockholder event, so they also released some numbers today too. So Disney Plus subscribers worldwide are up to 86.8 million, and it was 74 million last month, so they gained almost 13 million subscribers in a month. And they also said they are going to be increasing their monthly price by $1 a month to $8 in March. So guess who's paying for that bonus to the executives?
Me?
It's us. Yes, the answer is us. Here you go, sir. It does mention in one of the stories that Black Widow, a prequel to The Lion King, and Disney Pixar's Luca are all still on track for theatrical releases as of this point. So nice. I guess, still see a way that these are going to be available in theaters. I still find it strange that that's the choice they're making, but sure. So the other piece of news that came out of one of these is that apparently not only is Ewan McGregor returning for the Obi-Wan Kenobi series.
Yes, this is weird.
But Hayden Christensen is coming back to play Darth Vader.
Right.
Following up on, I don't know how we talk about it in spoilers-free zone, but given what's talked about with Ahsoka and Rebels and other stuff, it's like, oh, it would kind of make sense that you'd bring back Hayden Christensen to reprise his role as Darth Vader.
But he's going to be in a suit.
It's not going to affect his acting or anything. I mean, really.
Yeah.
I mean, won't that be a real kick in the teeth? Like I do think I like Hayden Christensen in other things that weren't directed by George Lucas.
And, agreed.
And
seeing him use his acting skill and not just be a wooden puppet to move to the director's whims might change a lot of people's minds. And like, oh, actually this dude could have been like, or in this case will be a very solid Darth Vader. I'd be interested to see if that happens.
So which series of all these announcements are you guys most excited for?
For me, anything Star Wars.
Wait, what, as a whole? You got to pick one if you're going to do that, right?
Like, I got to pick one?
Yeah, you got to pick which individual project out of all these. Maybe one Star Wars and one Marvel.
Well, Obi-Wan Kenobi, because I think it's a cool character.
Yeah.
I'm concerned about the villain in that one. Ahsoka is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, they all seem pretty good. If I were to choose one Star Wars one, I'm leaning towards probably Bad Batch, because I did like the Commander Cody and was it Captain Cody? I don't know. The blue guy and the yellow guy from Clone Wars.
Yeah, Cody and Rex, yeah.
Yeah, they were pretty cool and taking that idea of you know, this batch of clones has gone bad and therefore they're more unique and, mm-hmm. and seeing what they do. I'm interested in that. And I'm interested in Fantastic Four because it is not a sequel and is hypothetically the aforementioned attempt to do it right this time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the one that has me most curious, just because it'll be interesting to see what they do differently. How do they make this something that's going to work this time? And it can't just be as simple as it ties into the MCU. How do they make this work? It's been done. It's right. been done a couple of different times. Why is this one differently? Why does it work? So that'll be interesting, but I don't know. There's so much good to choose from. Secret Invasion seems like it's going to be interesting too. So that's the, where we sort of left Nick Fury at the end of Captain Marvel, where he's off in space and he's with the Skrulls, and Secret Invasion was a storyline in the comics based on the idea that the Skrulls, who can change into take people's identities, basically infiltrate all kinds of places on Earth and replace all these heroes. So all of a sudden, some heroes who you thought were dead are not dead, and some heroes who you thought were on your side actually turned out to be Skrulls in disguise and stuff. So it's a really good sort of spy, like it sort of fits in with that Nick Fury kind of vibe too, of, you know, we're paranoid, but there really are things out to get us and stuff. And Armor Wars was a really cool storyline in the comics too, with originally it was Iron Man trying to go around stopping people from stealing his technology and fighting against other armored characters from around the Marvel Comics universe. This one has Don Cheadle's War Machine taking that role, but that sounds pretty cool. Just the idea of, you know, a lot of pew 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 with War Machine versus a bunch of other armored characters sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. So that one's kind of neat. On the Star Wars side, boy, I mean, it's hard after last week not to want an Ahsoka series, especially because it seems like it's going to spin off of Rebels, which I loved. I am a humongous Rebels fan. So in the same way that Bad Batch is going to sort of continue the Clone Wars story, Rebels is going to sort of spin into Ahsoka, and it seems like her sort of storyline is going to take her on the same mission that she ended Rebels on. So that's kind of cool. And Patty Jenkins, director of Wonder Woman and Wonder Woman 1984, is going to be helming this new Rogue Squadron movie for the theaters in 2023. And Rogue Squadron, I read a bunch of the novels for that, and then also the comic book series about that. That's, you know, a very, very famous. There's video games. Like, that's been sort of part of the expanded universe of Star Wars for a long time, and much beloved. Lots of good characters, lots of good stories about this sort of crew of pilots and the missions they go on and stuff like that. So that one sounds really, really interesting to me. She's proven she can do big movies and do them great, and I'm really curious to see what it's going to be with her moving into that universe. And Willow. Yeah. Willow.
Yeah. That'll be quite the lineup, I think, of stuff. I know you just said it, and I have actually seen the character in the comics, the successor to Iron Man. I forget her name.
Riri Williams. Ironheart. Yeah.
Not the real name. Like Ironheart. Thank you. That one is interesting because that one feels like, as I understand the character, what if Black Panther's sister, Shuri was Iron Man? Is what it feels like.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
A child prodigy type person who takes over the mantle.
Yeah. She's essentially, in the comics, she's supposed to be smarter than Tony Stark. And in the story, in the comics, obviously Tony's not dead at this point, and he sort of sees something in her, and she sort of invents her own armor, and then, you know, goes on to become her own hero with his blessing, and sort of becomes Iron Man, more or less. Also, again, notable because Riri is black, so, you know, this is a premier character portrayed by a young black woman, too, so that's a good milestone to cross as well. And I'm glad they're doing an Ant-Man 3 as well, and a Black Panther 2 was also announced. We knew that those were going to come. We made sense for those things. Captain Marvel 2, we knew that they were going to do those sequels. Those were logical, but yep. Getting those confirmed, I didn't see anything about casting for Black Panther 2, so I haven't seen whether they've done any recasting, but they did say that, you know, a couple of little casting things that came out. They mentioned that Ant-Man 3, that one actor is going to be playing Kang the Conqueror, and Kang is a very good Avengers villain from days gone by, a time traveling villain, so it'll be really interesting to see where that story goes with that as the bad guy. So yeah, this is just a bowl of ice cream on top of a bowl of ice cream on top of a bowl of ice cream. This is just this is an amazing list.
No casting for Fantastic Four. There's the outside possibility that Chris Evans reprises his role of Human Torch, and they just do not even mention it in the universe. Just don't even mention how much he looks like Cap.
That would be brilliant. You look familiar. Nothing. Never mind.
Yeah, could be his cousin. Yeah.
Yeah. And as we joked about earlier, Tatiana Maslany, who denied to the CBC last week that she's cast as She-Hulk, was confirmed as She-Hulk today too. So, again, good news in one way, but also I have a little bit of an ethical question about that one, but whatever.
Well, maybe she was told not to say anything.
I'm sure she was, but like, there's a difference between you know, denial and like flat out lie, which is what she did.
How do you know? Were you in the room?
As a journalist, I have a problem with it. Well, I mean, yeah. I read her quote. I don't think her quote would have been taken out of context, although that's been known to happen from time to time. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, this is great. And so, speaking about, the cherry on the sundae. So there's this little bit of the story that's interesting. So in addition to all this incredible bonanza of content, Disney is also introducing its international answer to Hulu by including a service on Disney Plus, free to the subscribers, called Star. And Star is going to be out in certain European countries, Canada and New Zealand, beginning February 23rd. And it is it's a free edition. And it is basically, it is for the non-mainstream, non-franchise brands. So shows from FX, shows from 20th Century, and some of their other content. And it sounds like this is basically going to be Hulu content. So it says, Star won't carry titles from other studios. Instead, Star will only carry TV shows and films from ABC, FX, Freeform, Searchlight, and 20th Century Studios. But that's still quite a list. You know, we've talked before about some of the back catalog that they acquired when they got 20th Century, and also some of the other properties that they have through those partnerships, and then all the ABC content as well. So that's a pretty big plus for that service as well. And it seems like this is going to be sort of the perhaps more mature channel. So not, what was it, Disney 18 Plus we were joking about or speculating about with right. that fake trailer? This seems like it's closer to that. And at the low price of one extra dollar a month, which is what they're going to charge you, irrespective of whether you want this service or not. In Latin America, they're also adding Star Plus. And Star Plus will allow them to carry ESPN Plus and ESPN content as well. Here, I guess they can't do that because of sports streaming rights and things. But this is a nice little addition to this. This is the cherry on top of a sundae of good content. I've stunned you both into silence. You're so impressed.
Yeah, it's definitely very interesting to see how this stuff is lining up. Did you gentlemen know that I mentioned this already, that there is a Hallmark movie channel? Let me tell you, it's like $5 a month or something. I'm like, nobody ever wanted to pay for that. It was always thrown in as this extra thing in your cable package. Why are they charging for this? But all right.
What do they show on the Hallmark channel?
A romance-y, schmaltzy movies, aren't they?
Oh. Yeah, and it tends to be seasonal. Like, guess what? It's all Christmas stuff related
right.
stuff going on right now, just given the winter holidays. And then, you know, it schmaltzy stuff that's generally pretty family friendly is about how you describe it.
So are you in for that one, Jaime?
In terms of collecting them all, I don't think I'll collect that one, but hold that thought for later in the headlines here, because there's an interesting one.
Yep. All right, let's keep the ball rolling here with some more Marvel news. But earlier this week, we got a confirmation of another casting related to the third Spider-Man movie following up Homecoming and Far From Home. So speaking of gotta catch them all, they are now racking up a lot of former stars in Spider-Man movies. They announced that Alfred Molina is going to be returning as Dr. Octopus. He, of course, was villain in Spider-Man 2 starring Tobey Maguire. And there is rumors going around out there, which frankly I believe, that say that Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield are also going to be appearing in this movie.
Yes, we talked about that last couple of weeks ago. Yeah,
yeah. So it sounds like, I mean, they'd already talked about casting Jamie Foxx coming back as Electro. So it sounds like they're doing basically a Spider-Verse kind of...
Spider-Verse, I was going to say.
Yeah, sounds like they're doing their own version of a Spider-Verse story where we're going to get a crossover with all these different Spider-Men from all these different, you know, movie franchises, as well as their respective villains. So this sounds awesome.
Yeah. Will we get Spider-Man Giorgio as well?
You know what? If there was Killy there, I would be 100% on board.
Killy, yeah.
I'm curious if they'll bring back the Bully Maguire sort of thing, because that's been a thing that's been trending on YouTube videos.
Oh, when he's like venomized in the third movie?
Yeah, and people are using, you know, CGI magic to put him into all sorts of other movies. Works out to varying degrees of insanity.
Yeah, yeah. I was lucky enough to be working in LA at that point and covered that press junket and went to the premiere of that movie to see it and interviewed all the stars. And I just did not know what to say after seeing that scene. I was like, that's some pretty over the top acting.
What scene is that?
It's in Spider-Man 3 when Tobey Maguire's character is the host for the symbiote that becomes Venom, and it starts to turn his personality sort of dark. So it's echoes of the Christopher Reeve bad Superman in Superman 3. I guess when you get to 3, you have to turn your villain or your hero into a villain for a little while. But instead of shooting peanuts across the bar at 900 miles an hour, he decides to like strut and stroll and be a jerk for like 10 minutes of the movie. And it's pretty brutal. It's some pretty hammy acting.
You know, it's been a long time since I've seen Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man. I've forgotten the stories, right?
So imagine a 30-year-old playing an 18-year-old.
Yeah, yeah.
And there you go.
No, I know. I remember the first movie. I don't remember the second or third movie. And then, of course, there was the Andrew Garfield was the second one, right?
Well, so he did the sort of reboots. He did the Amazing Spider-Man 2 movies, right? With Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy.
Yeah.
And I thought the first one was okay. The second one was a bit of a disappointment. I would have been curious to see how they would have rebounded after that one. Clearly it was not to be, but I think the...
Which one had the Green Goblin with like the motorcycle helmet on?
That was the first one. That was the first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, and Willem Dafoe was the Green Goblin.
I mean, I like Willem Dafoe, but I did not get the whole Green Goblin thing.
Yeah, and he played it unusually, as is Willem Dafoe's way. I wonder if he'll be back. I wonder where they go, like how far they go with this. Are they going to make a Sinister Six by bringing back all the villains from all the different franchises of Spider-Man over the last, you know, 20 plus years? I think it's interesting, and I think it's really interesting because there's also rumors that this is going to happen in the Flashpoint Flash movie, right? That they're going to do the different generations of Batman characters, and it'll be really interesting to see, you know, if this sort of becomes a nostalgia trend too, to sort of rope in longtime fans as well as new fans.
Well, this next one is me, I think, right?
It didn't have a name attached to it, so
I thought
someone would claim it.
You know, it seems kind of hopeless. Let's skip this one. Except for the only one I'm interested in seeing is Shameless.
Oh yeah, this is what's coming up.
Yeah, this is what's streaming in Netflix coming up, and I mean, we can hit it real quick. Basically, this is in Canada, I believe. Yeah, so of course we've got Sonic the Hedgehog. Not really interested in that. Of course, Mariah Carey's Christmas special, Euphoria, which I don't know much about.
Yeah, that did really well. It actually Zendaya, who is also plays Mary Jane in the Spider-Man movie. Speaking of that, she won the Emmy Award for best performance in a drama for that this year. So you know, and I like her. So I've been meaning to put it. It's been on my Crave watch list for a while, but I haven't gotten to it.
There's some other high points. There's the Hunt is coming, which is kind of an you know, horror movie. Mm-hmm. Shameless season 11. This is apparently the final season. Mm-hmm. The one we were just talking about, Bryan Cranston's show, Your Honor, mm-hmm. Which apparently is about something his son does, something bad. There's a Godmother movie. There's this, what's this one? Alien Worlds. I'm not sure. I saw that one the other day. And of course, you mentioned Big Mouth before.
Yeah, well, that we'll talk about that more later in the episode. But safe to say, yeah. I'm done already. It's awesome.
Yeah, Captain Underpants, and of course the holiday movies that made us. We've talked about mm-hmm. Movies that made us and
toys that made us.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's a kind of an interesting one. Mm-hmm. There's a Citizen Kane making of, I guess, coming out, or is that a retelling of Citizen Kane?
So is that Huck? That's the. That's the story.
Mank. Yes.
That's the story about the guy who worked on that
movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And that one's another one that it, I guess they put it out in theaters, but it's coming to Netflix in mid December. Mm-hmm. That one is, they're talking about that one as a big Oscar contender. So that I think is going to be worth a look, I think.
Huh.
Mank. Yeah.
And Freaky seems like a horror movie, a slasher movie. And then Black Bear. I'm not sure what that one is about.
Oh, yeah. Black Bear. That's Aubrey Plaza. That looks interesting, too. Yes. I really enjoy her as well.
Yeah, yes, very interesting actress. Mm-hmm. And the next story, I just put this in here for color commentary, basically. People may already know about this, but Bob Dylan had decided to sell his entire musical catalog to Universal Music, which basically, you know, for billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah. Was it $300 million? You know?
Yeah, I didn't actually hear the number, but Carol did, and she said that it doesn't say in the article here what this is undisclosed now, but Carol kind of asked why, like, you know, is he sick? Is he dying? Whatever. And I just, you know, it's sort of, I think this is just sort of your cashing out or whatever. Maybe there's some reason why. And apparently Stevie Nicks from Fleetwood Mac has also put her a slice of her catalog up for bids as well.
Yeah.
But I just heard that today. So.
Well, but I think what it comes down to too, Tim, is that, and we talked about this, I think maybe outside of this podcast, but a lot of the revenue that these artists would have gotten in the past from radio plays and all these other and album sales and everything else is just gone. I think as far as legacy, that's where the money is now, is the publishing rights.
Yeah, for sure. And if you still own the rights to your music. I mean, a lot of these young, you know, the Beatles, for instance, didn't know enough to, they were just having fun making music, you know, and Bob Dylan is of the time, but somehow he held on to his rights, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of stories about bands in the 70s and 60s who just, you know, gave away their music. You know, Willie Nelson famously gave away, you know, tons of songs that he was very prolific. But, you know, he was also a troubled young man and, you know, needed the money at the time. And they would offer him something, some paltry amount, you know, which to him was like king's ransom at the time. And, you know, unfortunately. So it's interesting, to just an interesting story. I mean, Bob Dylan, you know, some people say he's the most prolific or the most interesting writer in America or American music, you know. So, he's up there with Simon and Garfunkel in terms of, you know, quality of prose, as it were, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, off to Jaime Lin for the next story.
Yeah, we got all excited about HBO Max and getting all of the Warner Media stuff for 2021. You know who's not excited? Fair number of the directors and actors and etc. And I think we'll talk about this for different pieces, but Christopher Nolan in particular called HBO Max the worst streaming service ever and denounces the plan for Warner Brothers. And I think, you know, there's certainly an angle of prestige that I think he's you know, probably getting at. It took a long time for people to realize that television could be prestigious after Netflix really helped, you know, sort of crack the old guard of that being like the lesser place that you would never ever see certain actors and actresses, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing will end up having to happen for movies and films that go streaming first as well. And the other thing that I hadn't really considered is like, oh, nobody could have foreseen to write these contracts that, you know, people are losing out on money of like, hey, we get a certain percentage of box office. Like, there ain't no box office. It's part of HBO. It's like, oh, wait, what? Like, that's not good. So I'm hoping that HBO, I'm not a lawyer, I don't know if they're legally, contractually required, is they really should do them a solid, and then everybody going forward should say, okay, let's write the contract so regardless of what happens, here's what we know what we're getting into, and we know what we're getting paid, which is the other part of it.
Well, and it's, Nolan has made comments in the past too. Like, he's a real cineast. Like, he believes in movies. movies in movie theaters, and he makes movies for movie theaters, and he's been disdainful of the movies outside of the theater experience for years. He's talked about it for since his career started. So I think he sees this as a slight on the art of filmmaking. He sees this as diminishing. But I mean, talk about biting the hand that feeds you. I mean, these are the guys that put up the money for Tenet. These are the guys that gave him three Batman movies to make. These are the guys who have basically funded the last dozen years of his career, 15 years of his career. And he has just ripped them a new one in these pieces.
It's so weird because, you look at what happened with Tenet, right? And given what we know about the rule of thumb for budget versus grossing at the box office, it lost tons of money because we know that you normally take budget and say triple it, and you probably start breaking even at that point with marketing costs and all that stuff, right? So the budget was somewhere around $200 million. Given the will-they-won't-they pandemic thing that happened, it only grossed $359 million worldwide, so it is well short of the 600 you would expect to start breaking even on in any normal year. Could maybe have been an 800 million, 900, maybe billion dollar movie. So I don't think there was a twinkle in their eye and smiles on their faces when HBO said, like, hey, Warner Brothers said, hey, we're going to take this stuff and put it on HBO Max. I think it was just the pragmatic way of dealing with all of this content that they had backing up.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, and as we talked about before, they have to recoup some money somewhere in order to fund the next thing too. So it is what it is. If you can get people's subscription fees, even in short bursts, I mean, they're not doing exactly what, I mean, I suppose they could. They're dropping, like, what is it, 17, 18 movies, they have said, that will be the theatrical quality movies that are going to end up on HBO Max next year. You could make a case that if they time them correctly, you would want to have a subscription for the entire year next year to maximize, be able to see all those things when they drop and then be part of the zeitgeist on them. But it's still not anything compared to what Disney's doing, where it's, you know, if Disney's on pace to be week to week, right? Like, they're going to be, you know, you have to have it 52 weeks a year, whereas HBO Max is looking more like you could have it for a month and then drop it for a month and have it for a month and then drop it for a month.
But HBO's always sort of been like the higher tier of online, you know, cable servicing kind of
content. They are prestige television. They have been prestige television long before anybody else even dipped their toe in the water. And they still are producing, you know, very high caliber programming.
Well, they started the whole sort of on-demand kind of service, right? Like, I mean, the whole home box office by itself title, right? Says it all.
Yeah, although they've gotten a little bit away. I mean, originally it was a mix of a little bit of original content and a lot of movies, right? And now they're not really, they're making their own movies. That's where sort of that comes in, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And the other thing that I tagged on the bottom there, Jaime, is apparently the decision to go with this streaming of movies and taking them out of the theaters is not just rankling directors, because the AMC film movie distributor, theater chain, I guess, in the United States, they went off. They went off last week as well. They were livid. They think that this hybrid distribution model, where they're putting it out in the theater but they're also putting it on their streaming services, is basically just going to murder them. And so the quote from this is Adam Aaron, CEO and president of AMC Entertainment: "Clearly, Warner Media intends to sacrifice a considerable portion of the profitability of its movie studio division, and that of its production partners and filmmakers to subsidize its HBO Max startup. As for AMC, we will do all in our power to ensure that Warner Brothers does not do so at our expense. We will aggressively pursue economic terms that preserve our business." So, yeah, they're not happy about this decision. They think that if people can stay home, they will. And they're probably not wrong. So, this is, again, another brick in the wall of, you know, the demise of movie theaters as we know them, right?
Right. Yeah.
And these guys recognize it.
It's really hard for them. I do think their model will have to change, that it's not every movie comes to some rinky-dink little theater that happens to have an AMC franchise. It'll be, no, you go to the event place that has the really good, you know, double IMAX size with, you know, you can smell and they give you food so you can eat exactly what the flavors and scents should be like. It will be like a full experience, a premium sort of thing. And and I was thinking about, like, oh, you know, the one thing you're missing out on when you watch something like a Wonder Woman 1984 in the comfort of your own house. I mean, yes, it is true. You get to save a whole bunch of money on popcorn and other stuff. But you know what you also don't get? You also don't get the, you know, branded popcorn cup. And yep. You don't get the... whether you even pay for it. Like, I'm not even saying like the ones you can buy that are kind of like memento souvenir ones. I mean, just literally like they print it out on the paper cup. Like, here you go, Star Wars or 1984 Wonder Woman. I think there's an opportunity here where I think they should, they being like HBO in this case, should probably cross promote this with like Jiffy Pop or Orville Redenbacher or something of like, hey, you know, we could send you a coupon. We know where you live, not in a creepy way, but like billing wise, we know where you live. We could send you this coupon or give you a digital coupon that you can go get at the store and get your collective commemorative cup they have, you know, that they sell at your local grocery store.
Yeah. I don't know. It is looking a little grim for the fate of movie theaters, because I don't know how long they can just sustain really, really what looks like it's going to be tremendously low attendance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, 2021 is looking very much like a write-off at this point. And, you know, after already missing almost all of 2020 and now looking like they're going to miss a good chunk, if not all of 2022 or 2021, how is that sustainable as a business model? Like, that's a lot of real estate. What do they do? Like, how do they keep that going?
Yeah. How do they do that? Indeed. Well, let's talk about a video game then.
Well, what they do is they make movies like the Metal Gear Solid movie.
Of course.
We talked about
Snake.
They talked about Oscar Isaac is going to be the star of the Moon Knight series on Disney Plus. Well, he's also now been cast to star in the Metal Gear Solid movie. This has been rumored for a while. It has been something that they have talked about wanting to do. It's obviously an immensely popular video game franchise and has been for 20 plus years. Tim, I know you were a big fan back in the day, and, and I've certainly played through a bunch of them as well. It seems like it could work. I mean, it's essentially, it's a spy story slab mixed with a little pew pew pew. Like, I really don't see why it shouldn't be a great franchise, and Oscar Isaac is a good actor, so I mean, it seems like a good fit.
Seems like, but I mean, the whole experience of playing that game and the reality of what, you know, the character in the game is doing, I don't know. I was more into the game mechanics when I was playing the game. Like, you know, same with Tomb Raider. It wasn't so much about the story or that blew me away or the cutscenes or what have you. It was just about the mechanics of the gameplay.
Yeah. You just like beating up the bad guys and stuffing them in lockers?
Well, yeah, but I don't know how you, like, you know, I don't know how you, I mean, like with Tomb Raider, like, you know, one of the levels right in the first game is you shoot monkeys and you shoot lions and you shoot wolves. I used to just run past them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like I get the whole, yeah, oh, I get to kill, shoot these things. But by the same token, though, I like, you know, I was more interested in the game, the puzzle solving than, you know, running around shooting things, right?
Yeah.
So, which is why I don't play Call of Duty and all those kind of things, right? So.
Yeah, although I think you can do that well in a movie. I think, honestly, I think that lends itself more to a movie experience than just the pew pew pew, right? You're right.
Well, I mean, Call of Duty movie is just a controller and make Oscar Isaac, you know, climb fences and leap, you know, tall buildings and stuff like that, might be a different thing. That's what I'm saying. I don't know how you'd put that into a movie, like the feeling of you know, controlling this like, it's like having an avatar that you could move around on the screen in front of you. Right?
Yeah, although I think the one thing that really made those games for me was the tension, right? So much of those games is about what's going to happen next and having to be stealthy, and just, I think really what it needs to be done is not just a pew 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 movie. It needs to be a bit of a thriller, right? It needs to be on an edge of a seat kind of movie.
Yep.
And I hope that having realized the success of the franchise, they can take it in that direction. But yeah, what they need to do is just sort of ratchet you up so that you're in Snake's shoes and you're feeling, you know, is he going to get caught this time? Is he going to get caught this time? Is he going to have to fight his way out? Is he going to be able to sneak his way out? I think they can make it work with a little bit of good writing.
Yeah, yeah. I know you probably haven't seen, was it Hill Die Repeat?
No.
Yeah, I mean, take for a minute, if you can just free your mind of the actor involved and just think of like Emily Blunt, right?
I love Emily Blunt, and I've heard that movie is excellent in spite of its craziness.
It is excellent because it plays like a video game.
Yeah.
Right? Like you know, this character goes through this scenario and he keeps dying, and then every time through the scenario he gets a little further, and it's a bit of Groundhog Day in a sense too, right? Which is very much like playing these video games is, like you said, like, you know, when you're you're playing Snake in the game, you're not going to survive all the way through on the first go, right? And you're going to keep going back at it and get better and better and better. And that's kind of sort of how that, I forget what it's called, but it's not, Kill, Die, Repeat is what they renamed it, but it had a different name before.
It was Edge of Tomorrow, wasn't it?
Edge of Tomorrow, that's what it was, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was an interesting movie because it had a sci-fi sort of plot behind it because it's actually the aliens that make you feel or experience things this way. But that was, to me, that was the closest thing to playing a video game in a movie that I've seen, you know, other than, say, the last episode of Twilight Zone this season or Groundhog Day, which sort of borrowed from the same sort of thing, you know, that the more times you go through it, the more experienced you are, right?
Well, what was that? The one that Black Mirror did, the Bandersnatch, felt like that as well.
Right.
That sort of choose your own adventure.
Yeah, well, Bandersnatch, you actually played through with your remote, like, you know, which is cool.
What about you, Jaime? Are you a Metal Gear fan?
I am. And I'm kind of wondering, like, I think the spy intrigue, so for folks who are not familiar, if you take Snake Plissken from Escape from New York and make him do more sneaky Rambo stuff, you kind of get an idea of what the flavor is. But that's the more realistic stuff. The very bonkers and bananas directions that the game series story takes is kind of going to be interesting to see how they take that in with, like, the Patriots and Sons of the Patriots and VR missions and other stuff that gets real wild real fast if you play the games. So I wonder if they'll do a more grounded approach to it. And even grounded, if you're going to stay true to the series, gets real nutty real fast, even for the more realistic parts of the franchise.
Yeah. I think it could be good. I will definitely pay attention to this one anyways. Speaking of comic book franchises and sci-fi franchises, we got another new CW show. So it seems like everything now as a CW show is going to be a DC property. So they have announced they're going to do a series based on a DC character, a relatively new DC Comics character by the name of Naomi. She is also a young Black woman. So again, yay for progress. It is also going to be helmed by Ava DuVernay, who is working on the DMZ series at HBO Max, and she's apparently working on a New Gods movie related to DC Comics. So she is sort of, you know, it's one of those sort of coming of age sort of comic book stories. This, you know, young woman discovers she has powers, and then she leaves her small town and sets out to sort of make her way in the world with, you know, sort of discovering how to be a hero and all that stuff. So it's a winning recipe and a very successful comic. She's only been around for 2 years. Brian Michael Bendis, famously creator of Miles Morales and Riri Williams and a lot of characters over the past, you know, 20 years or so as a writer. He created the Ultimate Comics Universe, which is this sort of font of great characters, created the character. And he is, he seems like, you know, all his ideas are getting mined now for content. And now this is headed to the CW. So I guess we'll see if this also works. It is interesting to see if it's going to tie in to the other DC properties, if this is going to be a thing, or if this is sort of a standalone story as well. So seems like that the CW is committed to being in the DC Comics business even more and more every day.
Right. Cool. And speaking of, you know, coming of age and getting really sexy. So.
Okay. So we were talking about the Hallmark Channel and who would pay for this. In a very similar vein, the Lifetime Channel, which you might know as the channel that almost always has like abusive husbands or boyfriends or otherwise women being put in very predictable, difficult predicaments. They somehow were convinced by what I can only assume was a very, very large bag of cash. They were convinced by the KFC folks, the Kentucky Fried Chicken is going to have a Recipe for Seduction, the movie starring Mario Lopez as Colonel Sanders. Prior to him developing the secret recipe, and as he's got this torrid romance with a young heiress.
The picture, I thought it was a joke until the people were like, and one of the questions I saw was like, is Mario Lopez owe somebody money or like what, how did this happen? Is he into the Colonel for like a couple million or something? Like
it's a 15 minute long soap. Soap opera that will air on Lifetime on Sunday.
No, seriously, like I mean, I've seen the commercials, and that's all I need to see, really. You know,
at 12
p.m. It's a commercial for Kentucky Fried Chicken, right?
It is, and I will be very disappointed if they do not give you like a coupon or some other sort of thing at the very end of the show.
So I mean, and they've been doing this for the last couple of years. They've had pretty famous actors playing the Colonel. You know, I think
Jim Gaffigan was the Colonel.
Norm MacDonald played him. Jim Gaffigan, yeah. You know, like you can see, like, you know, they'll get a Zach Galifianakis to play him next, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, just sort of funny people playing him and you know, bringing their own sort of universe to it, you know. So, and when I saw Mario Lopez doing that, I just thought it was funny that he was like the Colonel with his secret recipe of herbs and spices, you know.
Well, he'd be herbs and spicy, I guess.
Yes.
You got, you know, apparently, you know, what I assume is blending and reblending the, was it 18 herbs and spices to come up with the perfect match? Apparently that's a lot of work because he got hella jacked by just, you know, doing all that churning of everything. And I am curious to see if this works and if it is successful, what other things might we see? You know, is there an MCU style play here where, you know,
You mean KFCU?
Yeah. Cause I was like trying to think, all right, well, who are they owned by? It's like, well, they're owned by PepsiCo, right? And Pepsi owns like a ton of stuff. Yeah. Right. So, you can imagine the end credit scene where there's somebody like, so Mr. Sanders, we're building a team here, but we're going to have to make a run for the border to beat up for the folks. You know, get Taco Bell in there.
Didn't they have the Chihuahua mascot, the talking Chihuahua? Yeah.
We got to make a run for the border. There's a secret organization only known as the Hut. And I started losing track of what else besides Pizza Hut and Taco Bell was owned by PepsiCo. But you could see it happening. Everybody wants a cinematic universe nowadays. So I see no reason why it couldn't happen here.
Yeah, at least you want to have a cinematic universe.
Yeah, I mean, people may say, oh, well, what about like Ronald McDonald and hamburger? I was like, no, that's a different, it has to be a different franchise unless they do like this epic crossover, like, you know, Disney and the Looney Tunes coming together in Roger Rabbit, which is like the only time that has ever happened.
All right, so mine's real quick. We've been talking about a lot about the James Bond movies the last little while, and there, you know, there seems to be, YouTube has now started showing all 19 Bond films for free on YouTube in the U.S.
That's so weird that it's only, I'm like, I'm sure movie rights are difficult and etc., but why only in the U.S.? Very strange.
I don't know.
Of course, ours are available through our subsidized sci-fi here. You can watch all of the Bond movies are now on Crave, so they literally created
the
a channel.
The free Crave or the paid for Crave?
That's a good question. I'm not sure, but I did notice,
I think it's the paid for,
the other day that there is a sort of a stream on their feed now that basically says Bond, and it has all Bond movies.
Yeah, and are they 4K-ish?
No, nothing I think on Crave is 4K.
Didn't you say the Blu-ray? They're all Blu-ray though, right?
Well, they did restorations, but in order to get the 4K ones, you either need to buy the 4K Blu-rays or I think maybe stream them on Apple or purchase them from Apple. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, so we'll have to check it out. We'll have to turn on our tunnel bears and away we go. Yeah. Tommy, you've got the last one here.
Last one here is, I can't believe in 2020 people are this dumb to allow a movie to release knowing what cultural norms are that are different now, and with China being a massive market that everybody wants to pander to. I am shocked that they didn't have sensitivity training before releasing this movie. I am talking about Monster Hunter, which apparently its theatrical debut in China has gone disastrous, and that the movie has been pulled, given that there is a line that seems kind of racist for reasons that are not clear as to why they left this in the movie or even put it in, where a character says, look at my knees. What kind of knees are these? Chinese. Not only a really I'm laughing because it's so bad. It's hilarious, right? I don't understand why somebody thought, hey, let's put that in the script. Hey, let's have an actor say it. And let's actually leave it in the final version of the film. But the Chinese are mad, understandably so. This probably would have gotten some attention in America. And apparently there is going to be a new cut that comes out that removes that so they can put it back into theaters.
Is that an American movie?
I believe it is an American movie. I don't remember.
How insensitive.
who finances this. It's so complicated nowadays. But it's hilariously dumb to miss out on all this money because you had to leave in a really childish race related pun for you that's offensive to your largest potential market.
Woof. Yeah, that's not so good.
All right. Well, by the way, who's doing the recap this week?
That would be me.
Me. Okay, you. All right. Well, kids, it's that time of the show where we start to dissect and dissect. I guess we'll dissect it. We'll take it apart. We'll pull it apart. We'll poke holes in it. Star Trek Discovery. Season 3, Episode 9, Terra Firma. Wonder what that means. So off you go, Jonathan, with the recap.
Yeah. Well, this one is the episode that's been building for a little while. We knew that there was going to inevitably be a What the Hell's Wrong with Georgiou episode, and we finally got there. So here we go. So the episode starts with Culber in the medical bay, and he's having a conversation with Kovich, the secret Section 31-esque agent who we saw 4 episodes ago, who was interrogating Georgiou, and they're talking about how he is he's basically outlining what they knew, that this was going to happen, and he tells the story about this alien named Yor, who had time traveled from the year 2379, and they discovered that his time travel had sort of messed with his body and was basically like, driving him insane and in so much agony that I guess they had to euthanize him, or they were advocating his euthanasia because it was so awful. And they say that, what's going on with Georgiou is that her body is fighting to either go back in time or go back to her own dimension or both. But either way, it's not going to be able to survive where they are now. So again, I think we knew that given that they were talking about doing a Section 31 Georgiou series in the future, that somehow they were going to have to write her out of this show. So here we go. Georgiou is struggling. We see her in the mess hall and she is starting to lose her ability to touch things. She reaches over and tries to grab her wine glass and can't pick it up. Her hand is sort of phased through. So she's non-corporeal at times, which is really weird. Tilly, who is ever the bigger person, decides, I will go and I will sit with Georgiou in the mess hall and I will, bring her a little bit of, camaraderie. And Georgiou gives her a withering look and sort of says, you're going to be the one who causes the death of this ship. I can't believe Saru picked you. Maybe you will be Killy after all, which referencing her her Terran counterpart, who was this, maniacal, murderous person. And then proceeds to, when she's, Tilly sort of points out, hey, we know you're struggling. We can deal with this in a, private and respectful way. We can help you if you're struggling. I saw you couldn't hold your wine glass. And she says, well, yeah, well, watch this. And grabs the bowl of soup and dumps it on Tilly. Bit of a dick move, which, she's lashing out. Obviously, she's scared and she sees her end coming. Burnham shows up and says, okay, time to stop pouring soup on my friend here. Let's head down to the sick bay. The doctor wants to talk to you. Down there, they reveal to her that there is a possibility that something can be done about her condition. The ship that is now merged with the sphere and has sort of become this all-knowing oracle of everything has told them that if they go to Danis 5, which is near the Gamma Quadrant, that there is a 5% chance that they can save her life, as opposed to a 0% chance if she stays where she is. They have a conversation with Vance and Saru there as well. Vance, the Admiral running Starfleet, and he sort of says, well, the Emerald Chain is conducting training exercises nearby, but, we probably should be here. And Saru says, yeah, well, it's my call. And I say, no, in this case, it's the good of the many versus the good of the one. And we can't do this. And Vance overrules him. And I think I was a little surprised by that move, although, you know, for plot, it had to move forward. But Vance sort of says to Saru, you know, if you didn't do this, the crew would never look at you the same way again. So you got to do it. You have to take the chance and take the ship and go.
Yes, you have one shipmate that's drowning, he said.
Yeah, it's a good analogy. And again, it's a bit of a strange, I mean, Vance has been, I guess, softening a little bit to the crew. Maybe he's warming to the Disco, and maybe he's happy about them retrieving the burn data and everything else. But he was a real hard ass 3 episodes ago, and now he's like, take the ship that's our one hope for getting across the galaxy and go have a good time, you crazy kids.
It's funny, you know, I had a feeling he was going to turn, like I don't know what it was, maybe the way he was delivering his lines or something, that I just sort of had a feeling he was going to say, yeah, you know what, go.
Yeah. So we go down and we see Georgiou is down in the workout space, and she's, you know, sort of beating the tar out of things, and she decides that, and the other thing Vance sort of says is, Terrans are, you know, they want to go out in a blaze of, or is it him that says that, or is it Kovich that says that, wants to go out in a blaze of glory? I think it's Kovich says it.
Yeah.
Says, you know, you got to be careful because Terrans want to die gloriously in battle.
Yeah, don't tell her she's going to die because she'll take you out with her.
Yeah, exactly. So Burnham goes down to the training room with her and sort of says, you know, hey, you know, we're going to do this thing. And Georgia sort of turns on her and sort of, you know, is now challenging her to a duel to the death. And then they start fighting. She picks up a sword and looks like she's going to take a swing at Burnham's head and, you know, is screaming at her, fight me. She wants, you know, a glorious death, and she's fine with Burnham being the one to do it. In the end, she, you know, swings the sword, holds it back, doesn't do it. And, you know, she still has this soft spot for Michael in spite of the fact that she obviously has these complex feelings for her being the spinning image of her daughter from the Terran universe. She finally says, fine, I'll take the chance. We'll do this thing. So they give her this bracelet, the bracelet of death, where basically red means dead. If it turns red, you're gonna die. I love that in the future, that's as far as technology has made it, is basically a Fitbit that changes 3 colors. But they basically say
the mood ring.
Yeah, exactly. They basically say, okay, we're gonna do this thing. Let's go do it. We do our intro credits. We come back and we get a little bit of a sort of a, you know, farewell-y kind of thing. Again, signifying to me that this is sort of the last hurrah for Georgiou on the ship. She says goodbye to Saru, and there's actually some respect in her voice, which is surprising considering she's had a lot of disdain. I think she does at her core really respect him. And then Tilly, in spite of the fact that she was souped just like hours before, gives Georgiou a hug, and Georgiou finds herself, you know, even sort of hugging back a little bit. We see Georgiou and Burnham beam down to the planet, and it turns out it's the Canada planet. It's just like wintry, and there's snow falling, and it's tundra. And, you know, I was like, oh, just because you guys are filming here doesn't mean you have to show that. I mean, come on.
But one comment that I thought was kind of interesting about that scene, I don't know if you noticed it or not, but, you know, when you have finely packed snow, you know, and it's the same thing when I see scenes where there's sand, like dunes and stuff like that, is how did they get to where they were? Because if you look, I think I know how they did the video trickery, but there's no footprints leading to where they are in the middle of this snowfield, right? And as they walk out, of course, they're making footsteps. Yeah. So kind of a cool effect.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if they take them out in computer technology or if they literally...
No, they had a motion controlled camera, right? That would have filmed the motion of, you know, as the camera pans away. Mm. Then they would have put the actors down there, and then they would have had them walk on the snow, and then they would have taken the two halves of the images, and they would have put the pure snow. So there were in fact footprints there, but they masked them with two takes with the motion control camera.
Yeah, cool. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So while they go off on their wander through the tundra trying to figure out why they're there, we cut back to Disco and we're into engineering, where Adira is busily working on trying to create the algorithm that is going to help them figure out the mystery from the previous episode, which was there's this distress signal and it's coming from inside this nebula and it seems to be a Starfleet signal. She's working on that, but she's frustrated and she's clearly on edge. Stamets comes over and says, hey, you know, take it easy. You're clearly tired.
Forgot
you're sloppy.
To set the delegate.
Yeah, exactly. And basically says, you know, you don't smash my stuff, lady. And, or excuse me, person. And, They are very frustrated that they're struggling with this algorithm. Stamets speaks to them about the fact that, they haven't heard from Gray, and Gray is still missing, and they are struggling with losing that connection to Gray. And they set this thing so the algorithm is going to sort of, continue scanning. They're trying to get through. And then we cut to Saru and Book. Book, we remember at the end of the last episode, was saying to Burnham, hey, I'm in. I believe in this stuff that you've been preaching this whole time. I want to be part of the Federation Starfleet work that you guys are doing. And so he flags down Saru and they do a walk and talk through the halls, one of my very favorite things being a longtime West Wing fan. And they're walking through and Book basically says, I'm eager to help. I want to do my part. He confirms to Saru some of the whispers that he's heard through the couriers that he belonged to, that in fact there is this training exercise that the Emerald Chain is going to do. Only he's saying, just to be clear, just because they're calling it a training exercise does not mean it's a training exercise. And of course this is an episode after we had vowed revenge from the Osira, the leader of the Emerald Chain, that she was going to kick everyone's butt for embarrassing her in the last episode. And Saru sort of says, part of what we do here is that you can't force these things, you can't rush into things, but I think if you stay patient that you're going to find your window to prove yourself, and you'll find your groove in all this. I guess there's no Starfleet Academy anymore. They couldn't have just gotten him enlisted. They couldn't have just sent him back down to the minors for a while.
He already has a uniform that fits him.
So yeah, really. It seems like a natural fit. Mm-hmm. We cut down to the planet, and Burnham and Georgiou are wandering through the great white north? Sure. And they get to a spot where they think the signal that they're trying to find originates, and when they turn their backs, they find themselves looking at a man sitting in an Adirondack chair with a newspaper next to a door to nowhere. And he introduces himself as Carl, and...
Because he can't say Q, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And he's making weird, bad puns about adorable and all these, little weird things. I wrote down that Doctor Who vibes. It felt like something you'd find in a Doctor Who episode, this sort of weird, weirdly dressed person that's out of place in something that probably only cost like $90 to make. It felt very Doctor Who to me. And
well, they used to have a lot of portals in the original series too, right? Like they jump through the portals and go back in time.
Which was a great way to save money and tell different stories, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of a weird one. And so we're sort of left with that mystery for a bit. We cut back to Discovery, and they've gotten the signal decoded that Stamets and Adira were working on. And it turns out it is a message from Dr. Issa of the KSF Kileth, and it's a Kelpian ship. And they have this message that says, we are stuck here in the Viruban Nebula, which is where this has been originating and where they think that the burn started. And Dr. Issa says, we have gotten a signal from Captain Robert Weens of the USS Hiragana Janai. I did not look that up. I'm sure that's an important reference that I didn't have a chance to dig into. And they are basically in there waiting for rescue, but it seems like that rescue never came because the signal has been going out for 100 years. And it turns out that they, when they look into what their mission was, that they were in there because they were looking into a dilithium nursery. So I guess a place where dilithium originates. And so we are now getting slowly to start to sort of piece together more about the burn mystery this way. Back down to the planet, and there we have the door. Burnham and Georgiou have a little argument about whether or not they should be going through the door, and Georgiou sort of says, Michael, shut up, I know what I'm doing, I'm going through the door. And she walks through the door, and when she comes out the other side, she is the Emperor again. She is back on board Discovery, and her loyal subjects are all chanting Terra Firma and Hail the Emperor. And we see Killy, which is of course Tilly in her full regalia, which is just never not funny and delightful.
And she called her Killy earlier.
It was a good little tip of what was to come. And of course we see Owo with a big scar on her face, and all these different takes on the different characters. Mm-hmm. And quickly she's surprised, and you can see that, and some good facial acting by Michelle Yeoh. She's sort of taking it all all in, and her, she's acting with her eyes, and she's sort of trying to sort of figure out what is happening here. And she figures out it's the day that they christen the Chiron, which is, of course, that monstrous ship from the first season. And it's also the same day that Lorca and Burnham betray her. And she sort of, you know, is sort of soaking this in. She's sort of getting the lay of the land, and she is, you know, trying to see if she can figure out a way to do things differently, because she has changed in ways that even she, I think, is surprised by. And of course, there she, you know, some familiar faces all in their Terran versions, including we finally get to face to face with the Terran version of Burnham. Hello, mother. And we also inside, you know, their sort of lounge aboard the ship as they're drinking and fighting and threatening Kelpians. We see that Saru is actually aboard the ship as well, and Saru is one of the Kelpian slaves. Of course, it would have never occurred to Emperor Zhorzhou back in the day that this is somebody she knows or recognizes, but in this case, she is quick to defend him when he makes the audacious matter of offering a glass of wine to Burnham. Burnham is going to have him put to death, or more importantly, put to the snack bar. And instead she says, no, I'll teach him a better lesson. I'm gonna spare him, but I want him to be my, you know, I'll teach him, you know, to be my personal slave, and he'll wish he was dead. Yeah. So they return to her quarters. He's, you know, brushing her hair, and then they have a conversation where she talks about his Varahai, which of course is the maturation process. And of course they're still subjugated Kelpians. They, you know, they believe that they're meant to be cold, they're meant to be food, and that they're actually doing them a service by killing them when they start to hit this point, which of course we know has always been nonsense. And Saru is, you know, brushing her hair, and he puts on her big, you know, sun goddess headpiece, and, you know, she basically says, you know, I want you to be my spy. You're going to work for me. I want you to tell me what you know. And, you know, she's sort of probing what's going on with Burnham and why she's making the decision she is, why she's working with Lorca. You know, she's trying to get more and more into the root of, like, well, what did I do wrong? What drove this wedge between us? Because...
Yeah, what did I miss?
Yeah, like, what did I miss? This is a chance to, like, you know, this is It's a Wonderful Life starring Philip Georgiou. So, and when she walks out into the hallway, we see Rhys and Owo having a sort of a challenge fight. You know, I want your job. So Rhys is challenging Owo for her job, and Burnham and Zhorzhou place a 500 credit wager on who's going to win. And of course, the wager goes in the way of Zhorzhou. Owo plays a pretty nasty smackdown on Rhys, beats the tar out of him, and leaves him pretty bloodied, and then sort of says, that's enough, let's get back to work. They go to the sort of show that's going on there, where they're doing is there a name for that type of performance, the sort of the ribbon dancing?
With the ropes? No.
It's like aerials or something. I've seen people do that sort of thing for like Cirque du Soleil and it's
yeah.
That's they had like a Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon sort of vibe to it, which seemed kind of funny given what Michelle Yeoh starred in that movie.
Of course. Yeah. So Zhorzhou is basically this like it's theatrical performance using these sort of ribbon dancing.
It was a retelling of her victory.
Basically how she rose from the, you know, nowhere and became this vanquisher of the Klingons and this glorious tale. And it's narrated by Stamets, who is, you know, in full sort of, you know, hyper dramatic mode and is sort of laying this out. And they unveil the Chiron, this beautiful new ship that is going to be the seat of power for the entire Terran Empire. And we notice at this point too that Stamets is sort of edging closer and closer to Zhorzhou, and he's got a knife behind him, and it looks an awful lot like it's going to be an assassination. And of course she knows it's coming, turns the tables, shoves her dagger into Stamets's neck, and he is out of the game. To which I wrote A2 Stamets, because it seemed an awful lot of Julius Caesar in that one. And from there, we cut to the inevitable confrontation where, you know, Zhorzhou basically has all of her forces surround Michael and say, you know, you're busted. You know, I know what you're going to do. I know what you're going to do to me. I know that you've been with Lorca. I know that everything. You can't sneak that past me. I know what's going on. And the Burnham, the Terran Burnham is, you know, defiant. Execute me if you want to. I don't care. You know, you're weak, and I've seen your weakness, and you've been getting weaker every every day, and it's time for new blood. And we get a scene where Zhao Zhao has a sword, and it looks like it's going to be an execution. She just drags her sword across and then stops it just a bit short, leaving just a bit of a small cut on Burnham's neck. And she says, no, this is not the way I want to do this. I'm going to do this differently. And so she's sort of changing the past / future. She wants to see, if I spare Burnham in this moment, what's going to happen? And instead, she sends her off to the Agonizer, which, of course, we remember from the first season where Lorca spent some time in the good old Agonizer, this incredibly torturous device that is supposed to be exquisitely painful. And from there, we're sort of left with a to be continued. This is obviously the first part of a two-part episode where we're supposed to tune back in next time to find out, now that she's made this decision, what's it going to mean?
Right. And also, you forgot to mention that Rekha Sharma was back.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
Yeah, she was in the evil empire side.
Mm-hmm. That's Landry's character.
And we were talking about whether they were going to do a dark side or a mirror universe thing in this season.
Well, especially because they go out of your way earlier on to say, well, we haven't been in touch with this part of the universe and they've been drifting apart. And we get all that stuff from Kovic a few episodes back that, that's not possible.
So do you think that Giorgio, who now knows how the future turns out for the Terrans, you think she's going to change? Because she's obviously gone back in time. Like, she's gone back to, early days, like even before Lorca and Burnham run off together, don't they, in the first series? Like, isn't that how Lorca ends up in the Prime Universe? Bad Lorca?
Yeah, although I'm not clear. I think she kills Burnham. I think she kills Burnham. I think that's the idea, is that she...
Well, then how did Burnham come back in, like, when Burnham comes back, good Burnham comes, Prime Burnham comes back to the Mirror Universe? He doesn't say, hey, wait a minute, I killed you like last week. I think Burnham ran away or something like that with Burnham.
Yeah, I think she runs away with Lorca, but I think she was supposedly supposed to be presumed dead.
Right.
Yeah.
Although no one's seen her body or whatever. But yeah, interesting. But do you think that now that Giorgio, because she says to her, now we know how your future and my future end, at least I do. I see the future, she says, right?
Yeah.
I've seen the future. She can now change the path of the Terran universe, or is she in some sort of hologram or what do you call it, holodeck thing that like the Q dude set up?
I mean, that's the part I think that is sort of the weirdest part of this episode. It certainly is not it's not made in any way clear exactly what has happened. Is she really in that time? Is this all in her mind? Is she really in the past? Is this all, like, I don't know, you guys can throw out your speculative theories.
Maybe this dude is a time travel dude, because, like, like that portal, I think he actually says, how do you, like, what is a good looking portal? It's adorable, right? But because he calls it a portal at one point. Mm.
But then portal's just another word for door, too.
Yes, I know. I get that.
Yeah.
Who didn't know that when she walked through the door, she was going to end up somewhere else?
Oh, I mean, of course. Yeah. Like, it was all pretty telegraphed, but then it's still not clear.
Is it a time travel portal?
Yeah.
Like the ones I'm talking about in the original series where, one case where the planet was dying and they had this doorway you jump through, and, the one with the Marriott Hartley and Spock, goes back and reverts to a Vulcan from the old times, and with McCoy in the cave, and he starts to revert as a Vulcan to move towards the more barbaric version of Vulcan.
Yeah.
And there was the other one, and of course the one with Joan Collins, where they go back in time and they go back to Earth, right? Mm. And Edith Keeler Must Die, I think is the name of the episode, or something like that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Jaime, what are your thoughts on this one? Do you have a theory on what's happening to her?
I wasn't sure. I thought, well, this character, I wrote down in my notes, it's Patton Oswalt as Mr. Mixiplilic from Superman.
Yeah.
Is what he had a vibe, because he's got the derby, Boulder and hat. He just reminded me of Patton Oswalt, the actor. It did feel very Doctor Who sort of thing. So I said, oh, maybe this is like a Q, or a Q like being like Trelane or something that has abilities to mess with this sort of stuff, mess with reality. I'm unclear if this is like all in Giorgio's head. I don't know if it's showing you, okay, well, you get to sort of change reality for a little bit, but then we're going to reset it and you have learned something about yourself and everything. That was sort of unclear to me what was happening there. So not a strong theory, although leaning towards a Q or Q-like entity.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think the It's a Wonderful Life version of Star Trek, basically, right? You know, if you can go back and do things differently, what will happen, you know?
This episode also gave us, Tim, this is almost an MTJC thing of, like, I wrote in my notes, pair programming helps you find the missing semicolon, because Adira had... done something that programmers often do is, like, you
she
get
tired. She
forgot
to set the delegate, right? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like, she's like, the table view wasn't loading. And
she feels, they feel dumb because, I can't believe it was a simple thing. It's like, it happens, you just accidentally turned this off. And that's where Stamets noticed, not because he's necessarily smarter, but because he's got fresh eyes.
It's his equipment.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I see that thing is off. That's why. Oh, dang it, the missing semicolon. No wonder I've been killing myself for the last 4 hours trying to solve this bug.
Well, they don't read manuals in the future. We already established that. They just give people equipment and expect them to use it, right?
Yeah. I wrote that Owo is full-on intimidating.
Oh, yeah.
Very different in the mirror universe. When she beats up on Reese, like, holy smokes, she looks like a badass.
Yep.
The very beginning of this episode is interesting in that, you know, there is a faction in the fan base that doesn't believe the Kelvinverse to be canon, but it is straight-up canon. They just hard wrote it in here as... Yeah, all the stuff that Nero did that went back and created the Kelvin verse, that's canon. It happened. It is actually part of normal straight up Star Trek Discovery.
Hmm. What leads you to that conclusion?
So they said at the beginning that the incursion, the split in the timeline had occurred when a Romulan mining vessel went back in time.
Right.
And that's, I mean, they did everything except
the temporal wars, right?
Nero. And they went everything except, say, Spock and Nero and the events of Star Trek 2009.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Interesting, though, because, again, how do you reconcile that with Navarre still existing, right?
Well, I think what they must have known is that, as I understand that character of Yor, which they said 2379, and he wasn't wearing a 2379 suit. So apparently in the Kelvinverse, they don't go off of the season one or two TNG uniforms until apparently later in their history. but the character, he said, had come from a different time and from a different universe, which in this case is the Kelvinverse. So that's why he was double messed up, because the Disco crew has just come forward in time, and there is historical stuff from Star Trek Voyager where you can get time-based psychosis or something. You keep going back and forth between time. Layer on top of that, this dude came from another universe, and that's why he was suffering so much. And it seems to be that's why Giorgio is having the same thing. She went in time, like everybody else in Disco, but she's also not from this universe.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely, it's getting a little complex. It's so funny. I thought the Kovich character was interesting because in the first one, he is completely, you know, staid, and he's very sort of measured, and he doesn't give away things easily. And this one, he's like Mr. Open Book. He went from, you know, playing his cards super close to the vest to all of a sudden he's, you know, let me tell you,
he was in a room with Giorgio and he couldn't, you know, give away too much. Right?
Yeah, so maybe that's it. Maybe he felt with Culber it was relevant, and maybe he feels like her life was fait accompli, that she was destined to be toast and it didn't matter what they did, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe candor at that point is the best route, but I thought that was an interesting sort of turn too. Mm-hmm. So, good episode, okay episode, great episode.
It was a good episode, enjoyed it.
I like the mirror universe stuff more than most people do, I think. I could see why people would definitely have issues, because it gives the actors a very interesting opportunity to get really hammy, right? Sinequa Martin Green is a completely different person as well as Mirror Michael.
That makeup job was outstanding. The black lipstick.
And you're all wearing black stormtrooper outfits, so you know, Juno said.
And
like all the plastic, you know, like all the women leaders had gold, but all the sort of, you know, Oyo and all the other people, Stamets and those kind of people, had like a black stormtrooper kind of outfit on, you know, minus the helmet, of course.
Yeah.
I think that Detmer looks kind of like Detmer, just, you know, just without the, mm-hmm. the robot pieces. But you might even notice in the background, Nielsen is not a blonde in the Mirror Universe. She's got dark hair.
Hey, red hair, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Oh, was it red? Okay, it was darker. It definitely wasn't.
Well, darker, yeah.
It's not her usual blonde, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I could never get enough of Killy. She's just such a delightful character. She's so bloodthirsty, mm-hmm. even this episode where she's...
She still is a bit goofy, though, as, you know, as characters go. I mean, like, you would think, like, wouldn't she be more stern and more aggressive, and she's still sort of smiley and bubbly and with a phaser in her hand, right?
Yeah, but I think the idea is that she's supposed to sort of take this sort of perverse pleasure in being the kind of monster mm-hmm. she is, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to place the guy who plays the Carl. Isn't he from Law & Order?
Yeah, he has a familiar face.
He's like a sergeant kind of guy.
Couldn't quite put my finger on it, but I know he's a character actor who's been in a lot of different things for sure. Yeah, what those things are, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, no, I kind of get him as a you know, a police chief kind of dude, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he seemed like, he had one of those faces where, you know, oh, it's that guy.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe he was a doctor. I'm trying to think of all the regular shows that I would have, maybe.
Good old Ur?
Isn't that what you used to call it, Ur?
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with Ur. Mm. Also high on my favorite things of all time.
Your favorite not watch list?
There's a reason why I gravitate to science fiction and lighter fare and cartoons and other things. You know, I was a journalist for 25 years, and I've seen some really awful things in my lifetime, occasionally mm-hmm. firsthand, and I don't need to see that on TV. I don't want to see policemen and firemen and murders, and I'm good.
Yeah.
So ER was never something that was my cup of tea, because it just seemed too close to home.
Yeah. Cool.
Let's see.
Anyway, I found a thing on Wikipedia about Hiraga Gannai, mm-hmm. apparently a Japanese polymath. What's polymath mean? Like, they do all kinds of things? Or I don't know. From the Edo period, apparently.
Polymath is somebody who speaks many languages, isn't it?
Well, I don't know.
Sure enough, here, Paul, a person of wide-ranging knowledge or learning.
Mm. Mm. Paul Guilfoyle is the name of the actor who played Carl, best known for playing Captain Jim Brass on CSI Crime Scene Investigation, it says.
Oh, yeah.
He made his feature film debut in the movie Howard the Duck in 1986.
Yay. What's his name again?
Paul Guilfoyle. Guilfoyle.
Mm-hmm. Found him here. LA Confidential.
Yeah, he's a character actor. He's been in a ton of different things, and he is one of those faces where you see him and you're like, yep, I know that guy.
Yeah, The Good Fight, Primary Colors. Yep. How did you find him so quick? Is he in the episode?
I went to IMDb and put in Discovery and then to the episode guide and went to this episode.
Oh, because they don't often put the I mean, I did the same thing, but they don't often put the people in the current episode up until later.
Yep.
This is written by people, this IMDb. It's not necessarily written by studios.
Yeah. Well, apparently they were on the ball today. So there we go.
Remember, Tim, just a fact check. Yeah, remember, Tim, that it premieres on CBS All Access at like midnight, I think. Midnight Pacific. So it's like 3 a.m. East Coast, I mm-hmm. think. So there's been enough time for folks who wake up early or stay up late to see that and go look it up, I guess.
Yes, Canada's own Sarah Mitich was in this one. Mm-hmm. Oh, we didn't get to see Kelpian Serpent, the one that gets turned into Sarushi is Linus.
Oh, is the same actor?
Oh, yeah, just Kelpian Servant.
Oh, that's good. Good to see that guy getting work. What's his name?
David Benjamin Tomlinson.
All right, from now on, right up there with Sarah Mitich. We love you.
Yeah,
where he's you're from. A scene stealer.
Don't say where he's from. Well, he's an orphan black.
Is he Canadian?
Maybe.
Can we adopt
maybe
him?
He's Canadian. Let's unofficially adopt him until we can figure out where he's from or what he looks like without makeup on.
Nice.
That's a trick, right?
Yeah.
Well, he was in Short Treks, Male Villain.
Well, he's come a long way from Male Villager, so good for him.
Mm-hmm. Played Troy in Orphan Black. Of course, I have no idea who that is.
Shamefully, I still have not watched Orphan Black.
Really?
Yeah, it's been on the to-do list, but, you know, by the time they got to 5 seasons worth, it was like, darn, I'm so far behind, and it's a commitment, right?
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, with that thought in mind, let's jump to our watch list. And what have you got, Jaime?
I've got the Screen Rant Back to the Future pitch meeting. So if you've never seen any of these Screen Rant pitch meeting videos, the conceit is you have a screenwriter who's doing a movie pitch to a studio executive, it happens to be the same actor playing both sides. It's all played up for comedy of like, let's describe movies in their most absurd sort of context. And with something like Back to the Future, you get fun things like, oh yeah, so there's this scientist character, and you know, he does this animal testing and he works with terrorists, and like, whoa, so he must be the villain, right? No, he's actually one of the good guys. and the premise of this later part of the movie is this kid has to like pretend to sexually harass his mom, but then the bully comes in and actually sexually harasses the mom, and he's like, whoa, are you sure people are gonna want to see this? No, it'll be totally good. And I just like seeing the Back to the Future franchise and the first movie in particular get the send up of like, yeah, it's actually kind of a really weird and absurd sort of concept if you were trying to pitch it without knowing what it would become.
Yeah, if you think about the pitches for some of your favorite movies, they definitely fall apart pretty fast. But that one in particular is So there's incest and there's terrorists and cool. I'm definitely gonna check that one out.
So guess what Canada has produced out of Scarborough, Ontario?
David Benjamin Tomlinson.
No,
come on, he's from Toronto. I just looked him up and put him in our notes.
He's
from
Toronto. Okay. No, I meant.
Oh, you meant the other guy. Notes.
Yeah, I'm talking about the new voice of Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, I saw that story in the CBC.
Yeah, so I saw this video actually on I don't know his name now, unfortunately. He was on the news the other day. But he's the new voice of Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and Sylvester the Cat, and he's been Marvin the Martian for a while.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a video clip here of him. Actually, let's do a quick search here. CBC voice of Bugs Bunny. Give this guy some love, some Sparkcast love. By the way, did you see my thought the other day that we should have named this thing?
Spock's Brain?
Spock's Brain would have been a cool name for this. You can always change it, you know, just say we're just like George Lucas. It's always been our intention to do this, right?
So. Yeah, you know, we'll just, but it's not enough to just start it with a new episode. We have to go back and re-record all the previous episodes, but reference ourselves.
We'll dub it in. We'll just say it once now. Say Spock's Brain, and then I'll just go in and pop your name in the top. Eric Baza is the name of the kid. Grew up in Toronto, suburb Scarborough, Ontario. Nice. Now he lives down in L.A., and he's been the voice of Bugs Bunny for a while, so it's kind of cool.
Good for him.
It's interesting, in the video, he shows pictures of himself like in grade 7 with braces, and he's wearing a Bugs Bunny shirt, you know, so.
Nice. Toronto Maple Leafs jersey as well. Couldn't get more Toronto area than that.
Yeah,
I just I just did a search for David Benjamin Tomlinson, the guy who plays Linus. He's from Toronto too.
Ooh.
We claim him. Oh, he is ours. Make,
yes, I think we talked about him before, but
I don't remember him coming up. I know we've been fans, but great.
Mm-hmm. I recognize the face because I think I went on IMDb, but that picture that you see here on Memory Alpha is not on IMDb.
No,
which is
strange. It's funny. He's got a more robust profile on the Memory Alpha.
He played a Vulcan too on the in the Vulcan. Hello. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Oh, he is all over this wear a mask in the Star Trek universe. Someday he'll be Saru.
Kelpian villager that we saw him today.
Yep. I mean, they film in that area, right? So,
oh yeah,
I imagine
this is part of Jaime's CanCon Canadian content rules.
Yeah, but it's also very easy for him where they're like, oh, well, you're gonna have to be here for like 3 hours in the chair. He's like, oh, it's easy. I just walk out of my apartment, go downstairs, walk about 5 minutes, and I'm at the chair. So that's not an issue at all.
Yeah. For sure.
All right. Well, my watch list thing for this week is, as we talked about earlier, Big Mouth Season 4, one of my favorite shows.
What's your pick a couple of weeks ago?
It was about, how much I was looking forward to it. And it was everything I hoped it would be. It's continues to be one of the smartest, stupidest shows I've ever seen in my life. It is so vulgar and disgusting at the same time as being so smart and so thoughtful and so important. There was, you know, this season they delved into one of the characters is transgender, and so they sensitively deal with that. One of the characters is biracial, and they did a very interesting storyline around that. It's such a weird show. There's so much genuine, intelligent, articulate conversation that young people could get from this show to understand sex and sexuality and who they are and who other people are, and then in the same conversation it is just over the top, disgusting and vulgar and hilarious. Like I say, it is the smartest, stupid show I've ever seen. And
this is on the Netflix.
It's on Netflix. So I plowed through it on the weekend. It's only 10 episodes and they're only like half hour episodes. So it didn't really take very long. And then my eldest son, 17, he is also a fan. So he's been sitting down and watching it one at a time and I've been watching with him. And we are, even on a second watching, I'm killing myself laughing. There's so many funny lines. There's so many funny characters mixed in with, you know, just this hyper awareness of itself. But they also, they made a point of, you know, making sure that they are, you know, speaking knowledgeably. They, you know, the cast bring in people who can write sensitively about sensitive subjects. And so, you know, there's just all kinds of really, really topical and smart stuff happening this season, but it's all mixed in with the goofiness. And, you know, your kids aren't careful. They'll come away learning things, you know? I can't recommend it highly enough. It's such a good show and so well done. Again, it's one of those shows where you get to the end of it and you're just like, more, I want more. This is so good. But obviously that kind of genius takes time too. So you can't rush these things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, luckily they don't have to learn it the way I learned it on my walk home talking to my friends. It means what? You're kidding me.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Well, and it's you know, like one of the episodes deals pretty spectacularly this season. One of the episodes deals with menstruation. And, you know, the show, you know, in its typical way goes way over the top on it. But mixed in with that, right, there's some real smart, thoughtful, important conversations.
Like science-y explanation?
Yeah, well, not even science-y, but just, you know, like that this is, you know, what they're really good at is just normalizing these things, you know.
Oh, these weird things.
You know,
yeah.
One of the characters, they go to summer camp, and one of the characters from between being 12 and 13 realizes that they are a young woman and not a young man, and so comes back to camp,
right,
and has a new name and is now a girl and is now in the girls dorm with the girls. And you know, at first the guys are all like, oh my god, and then they're in within very short order it's just normalized. And you know, that's the strength of good television and good storytelling, right, is that,
right,
that
right, yeah,
you know, it's not just oh my god this, it's just that's how things are. And yeah, you know, again, just can't say enough about the writing on this show.
Yeah, right. Well, it's coming up on Christmas time. I just want to say one thing before we go, and that is there's a big debate about, you know, whether or not Die Hard is actually a Christmas movie. And there are two types of people, those who know it is and those who are wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
A Christmas Story is actually a Christmas movie too.
Well, you and I used to watch Die Hard around Christmas time back when we were living together. That was a thing.
And
Christmas Story. Yeah, no, it's there's not a lot of Christmas movies that I want to watch every single year. Christmas Vacation's on the list. Christmas Story's on the list. Die Hard is on the list. Didn't it originally come out in summertime, though, even though it was like Christmas themed?
I don't know.
I think that might be.
I only saw it on VHS. Sorry,
I
mean,
no, I think you might be right. I'd have to look up to see what the date was, but that sounds about right. And the two schools of thought that seem to be in conflict as to are certain movies Christmas movies or not is there's the very permissive school of thought, which is if Christmas takes place as a major time of the movie, it is a Christmas movie. So this disqualifies things where like, oh, let's, this couple spends a year together. It's like, well, I mean, obviously they're going to hit Christmas at some point. That's not a Christmas movie, but the vast majority of the movie takes place during the Christmas time frame. Yeah. So like Hanukkah would be close enough, right? Cause it's like that same Christmassy time frame. The more restrictive kind that says, no, Christmas has to play a critical part that like the plot of the movie could not occur if you took it outside of Christmas, which Die Hard fits both, right? So yes, it does take place during Christmas, and the whole villain plot is dependent on the fact that certain criteria for security are met given it's the holidays. It's a little bit more relaxed, right? So hopefully that makes sense. Home Alone definitely qualifies. Gremlins wouldn't make as much sense if it didn't take place during the holidays, right? People more relaxed and other stuff ends up occurring.
Carol was telling me about a Lego kit that she saw where maybe it was like an advent calendar or something like that, where it's like the tower.
Oh yeah, I've seen that online.
And you got the bad guy, I forgot his name. Hans Gruber, played by Alan Rickman, and you pull out a level every day and he falls further and further down the elevator shaft.
Yeah.
Each day. There you go. Alrighty, well, on that thought, hey, Jonathan, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram as at GPK News.
All right, and Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you?
I'm on Twitter as at Dev with the Hair.
My name is Tim Mitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A, on the Twitter machine is where you'll find me. And so until next time, for like the 400th time I've said this, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
It's not over till you say "and scene." Otherwise, Jaime and I will just keep podcasting all night long.
It's funny. It started on the other podcast because, like, for the same reason, like they would kind of just wait for me to say "and scene," and we argue about whether it's "end scene" or "and scene." And I think it's "and scene" from the improv,
yes,
right? Or from
it's John Lovitz, isn't it? "And scene."
Well, yeah, "and scene," but it's also. You know, like I've seen Amy Poehler do it and a few other people.
And scene. Nice.
Yep. But you're right. Yeah, it is definitely John Lovitz.
Acting. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Oh, look, it's first day of Hanukkah today.
Acting. Genius. Thank you.
Yeah. So, bedtime reminder.
Did you see the pictures of Baby Yoda wearing his yarmulke and his full gear? It was on, I think it was on, there's a great, one of my favorite feeds on social media is on Instagram. It's a feed called Nerds with Vaginas, and they posted that one today of him with his elixir. He's dressed up like a little rabbi, and it's genius. It's so good.
Mm. Oh, I see. For Hanukkah.
Jaime, were you spoiled on what happened, what transpired in the most recent episode of Mandalorian?
I have not. Yeah. I'm in very dangerous waters considering that the 15th is coming up just a few days from now. So I hear it's all cool stuff. I mean, stuff like the Baby Yoda is just the universe could not hold back that spoiler, right?
Yeah, so
feels like you get some forgiveness in the whole online world for that because it's just such a big win for them.
Well, I have two friends who are dangerous on social media. One of my friends is here in the city, but he got laid off, so he's home. So he stays up until 3 a.m. Eastern time and watches the episode as soon as it drops. Oh, and so if I wake up first thing in the morning, if I wake up at, 7:30 in the morning and I roll over and I start checking through socials, I have to be careful because he won't put spoilers up, but he'll say things like, oh my God, that was the greatest Star Wars moment of my life. And you'll just be like, oh, now I have to figure that out. Okay, be careful. But my brother-in-law is in Western Australia, which is the time difference is pretty substantial. So he's almost a full half day ahead. And so he will sometimes post things on there and be like, oh my God, this character's debut was so amazing. And I'm like, just come on, man. Like, come on. I know you've got Australian friends too, but come on, man. So yeah, now I've learned to try and it's challenging because my job is around social media. That's what I do for a living. And I can't not go on social media first thing on Friday morning, but man, I want to. I want to avoid it.
Yeah, it's definitely tough.
Yeah. Well, all I will say is if you're a Star Wars fan, it has been a very satisfying season so far and very much something you should prioritize as soon as you get the service.
Yeah, And that's why I've been kind of wondering, all right, so it is 8 episodes. They're about half an hour. So the first season is 4 hours.
Well, some of them are longer. They vary. They can be as short as a half an hour and as long as almost an hour or a little, I think one of them's a little over an hour. So.
Oh, okay. So then maybe instead of the 16th, which is what I was considering, maybe I'll subscribe on the 15th and then cut it real close for the January 15th debut of WandaVision. Where I'd have to watch that like the day it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And then cancel my service if I decide it's like, oh no, I can wait for that one and binge it all later.
Yeah, so that was among the trailers that came out today too, is the they did a new WandaVision trailer, which gets a little more into sort of what's going on, and there's a few more characters that show up. We see Monica Rambeau from Captain Marvel, the other pilot that is friends with Brie Larson's character, Carol Danvers, and I'm really curious to see, obviously a lot of these stories sort of combine original storytelling with some elements from previous comic stories and adaptations and things like that. I'm curious to see which elements it draws from and what's original and everything else, but it looks really interesting, like very, very head trippy. They also put up the Falcon and the Winter Soldier trailer went up today as well, and they put a release date up. That's coming in March, so not too much farther ahead for that one. So you can always, wait till that one runs its course and then watch all of WandaVision and all of Falcon and the Winter Soldier there as well. But Loki, they've also confirmed Loki's coming in May. So basically every other month, you're going to get a must-watch series there. And Loki, they put the first trailer up for that one. Again, very sort of head-scratchy, but Tom Hiddleston looks like he's having a great time. So lots of good content coming to that service. And again, like it's not... by the time they run it out, by the time you go through the full season of WandaVision starting in mid-January, that pretty much times you out to when you have to pick it up for Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which pretty much times out to when you have to pick it up for Loki. And that's just the Marvel stuff. You know, like it really is becoming kind of a must. And it's still reasonable. Again, Netflix's premium package now is up, I think it's $18 or $19 here in Canada. It's still only, I think I'm paying $80 for the entire year for Disney Plus. Like they really are giving you a lot more bang for your buck.
Yeah, that's one of those things where I'll have to figure out, given the lineup that they have, if a deal comes out, this might be the time to go ahead and like, all right, next deal that comes up, just pay for the 6 months or a year up front sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a little bit more of a certain sort of concept.
Yeah, mine did. It came up to the auto renew and it was like, oh, congratulations, you've just auto renewed for the next year. And I was like, that's fine. I'm fine. I'm good. I feel like that's an investment worth making at this point.
Cool.
Well, yep. Hope you make it to the 15th without the spoilers, because I can't imagine how hard that must be at this point.
I figure at this point, just accept that maybe I might get spoiled for some stuff, but at least if I do this correctly, I could not be spoiled on the final episode. But at least there'll be one episode of The Mandalorian that I'll be watching real time with everybody else.
Yeah. Does that mean in a couple of weeks we can talk about all the Mandalorian episodes?
Yeah, because we wouldn't be able to talk about it on the 17th, because nobody will have seen the final episode. So looking like the 24th.
Yeah. We're not going anywhere.
Indeed. Indeed.
It's going to be the quietest Christmas holidays ever.
Let me leave you all with this final thought that I had, given what we were talking about for the recap of like time travel and different universe. Like how far does the universe thing go? Because could we see a scene in season 2 of Picard where it's like, hey, Harry Kim, good to see you. You've lived a long time. Oh, and he doubles over in pain because remember, Harry Kim is not of this universe either. Spoilers, he got replaced by his other version, alternate version of the other Voyager.
Voyager. Yeah, because I just watched the episode where Tasha Yar comes back and falls in love with that dude and decides, she finds out Dick Guinan says, I don't really know you. You shouldn't be here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. True. That's yesterday's Enterprise. It's a classic.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, it seems like there's going to be lots of stuff to catch up on now. I even feel like I was trying to get through all these trailers, and they did announce some other stuff. They announced like who's going to direct some of these things. And I want to sort of dig into like who are these people? What else have they done? They announced some of the casting, like they announced who's going to be the star of some of these shows, like who's going to play Riri Williams and stuff like that. So now I want to like start digging into like, who's this? What else have they done? How's this going to work? And that's how I'll spend my weekend.
Mm-hmm. I'm just putting together some trivia questions for tomorrow's team lunch.
Oh yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You do trivia based on anything in particular or just random?
Just anything. Got any trivia for me?
Oh.
I know.
Who plays Linus on Star Trek Discovery?
Right.
And the winner of this prize is an iPhone.
Yeah, who's the C in MTJC?
Nice.
Mark keeps saying we need to get somebody named C on the show. Yeah. It was originally called AJM something.
I still think we should have named this podcast. Well, you guys started it. I joined late, but it should have been called more than just Spock or more than just Trek or something. Just follow in the footsteps of greatness.
Yeah,
we'll just keep spinning them off. And now next up will be more than just Marvel. No, you know, more than just Marvel. More than just Mandalorian.
Yeah, we were joking a little bit about having an MTJC Plus where people can pay us $14.99 a month for additional content. Could be part of that.
Yeah.
You don't have any trivia questions? I've got four of them. I've got a few here to put in.
Literally anything? I mean, I feel like you could say like how many doctors have there been?
Yeah. Again, which people might reasonably know. Dealing with?
How many Doctor Who's have there been?
Yeah. How many?
Yeah, but that's a tough question to answer because are we talking TV? Are we talking like everything? There's been a few, right?
So you want,
it's not just 13. There's not 14 doctors, right? That on the show, and then there's the War Doctor. That's 15.
Do you do like multiple choice, or do they actually have to give you an answer?
Multiple choice, yeah. Well, I mean, you can do, there's a different kind of questions, but yeah, you can, I guess you can add different kind of, I'm doing a multiple choice for tomorrow. Yeah.
How many people walked on the moon? How many human beings have walked on the moon?
12? How many? Do you know?
I'm looking it up. I just thought that was a good question.
Okay. I don't have the slightest clue.
Well, then we're off.
Yeah.
No, it's, so there's
12 11, of the 24 12, human beings 14. Who have traveled to the Earth, from the Earth to the moon, have walked on its surface so far. 12 of 20, 12 of 24.
12.
This is according to NASA.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Yeah, and kind of timely given.
How many people have allegedly walked
would
on the moon?
Would you like to know their names? It's Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin.
I can name them.
Oh, go
all.
Ahead.
No, it's okay.
Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, Pete Conrad, Alan Bean, Alan Shepard, Edgar Mitchell, David Scott, James Irwin, John Young, Charles Duke, Gene Cernan, and Harrison Schmitt.
Who was the last one to walk on the moon?
That's a good question. Let's see here it says. There are only four surviving people who have ever walked on the moon.
Mm-hmm. But who was the last one?
Apollo 16.
That's an easy
Thomas.
One.
Oh, no, this is who actually walked on the moon, eh?
So there were 24.
Collins,
of them,
I think,
said?
Might be the last one.
No, he never walked on the moon.
Oh, no, he was on the crew. You're right. No, he did walk on the moon.
What's the right answer?
He was
12?
On, oh, that's orbited. You're right. 12. 12 of 24, yeah. Surviving moonwalkers. Harrison Schmitt, Apollo 17.
It's like bonus question. How many countries have walked on the moon?
One.
Yeah.
But did you guys watch the Chinese land their lander on the moon the other day?
Oh, did they do
it? Yeah.
There's a full video you could watch them. They basically like, you know, fly over and then they hover over and then they just settle down. It's pretty cool to watch. Mm-hmm. Did you guys watch the unfortunate landing of the rocket the other day?
That happens, man.
You know what? At least there was nobody on board.
Yeah. Did they say why it?
No, I haven't seen any follow up on that.
Hmm.
Apollo 17, final moon landing mission, remains the most recent time humans have traveled beyond low Earth orbit.
Yeah, I gave that funny bonus question because it's like, well, for the time being, it's only America, but China's getting there, and I think India wants to get there as well. Yeah.
Well, I think everybody's realizing that that's basically the next great bastion for mining, right? Everybody wants to lay a claim to being able to go up there and start digging around and seeing what they can find. I mean, realistically, you can just bring back a bag full of dust and sell it for a fortune, let alone the actual minerals and stuff that would be in there.
Right.
Yeah, haven't been to the moon in my lifetime or yours, I may.
So they stopped before 1981.
Have the Leafs won the cup in your lifetime, Jonathan?
What's that?
Have the Leafs won the cup in your lifetime, Jonathan?
No, they have not. And not in your fandom
either.
That's
okay. The Kraken haven't won either, so you're
all right. Well, it's time to put some money down. How much money goes down that the Kraken will win before the Leafs do?
Oh, interesting.
Hey, look how fast the Vegas Golden Knights were able to turn an expansion franchise into a cup contender. I don't think I'd bet against it.
Yeah, that's the expansion teams. They set them up for success in the modern era.
Way better than they did back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Seattle Sounders. Your Seattle Sounders, or my Seattle Sounders at the very least, are in the MLS Cup yet again.
Mm-hmm.
After deciding to spot two goals to Minnesota.
And I know, what a crazy comeback, eh?
I had given up. I was like, man, I am so angry. What's going on now? And then they're like, wait, could be interesting. Wait, we're going into overtime. Nope, no overtime here. Just but just finish it off. That was insane.
Yeah, no, good for them. I mean, they are, you know, like them and the crew are sort of the class of MLS. They just seem to somehow always find a way to get there. TFC was good, consistent for a good 4 or 5 year stretch there, but we seem to be tailing off, unfortunately. And Vanny just quit. Our coach just quit too, which sucks.
Who quit?
Vanny, the coach of the Toronto FC football club. He just resigned after a disappointing season.
Yeah, I mean, if it gives you any weird hope, I'm not going to call it false hope because it's a very strange hope. So every once in a while, my significant other says, like, are they going to fire the coach? And the reason she says this is because the seemingly worst year for the Sounders was when they fired Siggy Schmidt, when they were just doing awful, and hired or had Brian Schmitzer go in. And I was like, you know what? I will absolutely accept the idea of changing coaches mid-season every year if it means we win the cup every year. I will live through the heart, you know, the heart attack sort of feeling during the season if it means that, like, at the end of it, you're going to win.
Yeah.
So losing your coach is by no means a bad thing, because maybe you might win the cup next year then.
Yeah, really? Yep. Well, everybody can use a little hope. My favorite sort of sport to watch nowadays has been basketball for the past number of years, particularly because Toronto has been very competitive, but also just because the quality of the NBA has been very high. And sorry to rub that in, Seattle fan.
Rough, man, for sure.
But I can't wait till basketball's only like 2 weeks away from starting up again, and looking forward to seeing the hoops come back. That'll give me something to tide me over until the deluge of Disney Plus shows starts coming through. And I won't stop in my advocacy for a Seattle Sonics return.
I keep watching like a vulture. I'm like, who's who's having issues? Did some old man die? Did somebody get divorced? Is some city unwilling to provide a brand spanking new multi-billion-dollar stadium? It's just waiting.
Yeah, I really there's some markets too where I keep thinking over and over again, like, how is it Seattle doesn't have a team but X city has a team? You know, Sacramento is the one that always jumps out to me. Like, how is there a team in Sacramento, California, but not one in Seattle? That just seems criminal.
And we needed to institute like a socialism where I was like, all right, LA, you've got two teams. You don't really need more than the Lakers. Give us the Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Like, honestly, I thought when Ballmer bought the team that's where it was going, right? Like, that seemed like the logical move, but now he's building them a stadium and he's committed to staying, and I don't understand. I don't get the rationale. Like, it's a Lakers town. It's always going to be a Lakers town. There's nothing they can do that would make it not a Lakers town. There isn't, it's not like Brooklyn and New York. Well, I still think everybody in New York is a Hoops fan, is still a Knicks fan, but I could see that there's enough of a population in Brooklyn that maybe you could make a dent. But in LA, you have no chance. You have no chance. And having LeBron come there and just win a title, like, that just, it just absolutely sealed that. Like, there's nothing they could do to become, oh, this is a Clippers town. Like, all people do is get Clipper season tickets so that they can see all the teams because they can't get Laker tickets. I don't get it. They've been talking for years that, you know, the greater Toronto area would be a perfect place to put another team or two in the NHL because, oh, people would just, you know, they'd flood the stadiums and they'd sell all the tickets and people would buy jerseys. Like, I'm not sure. It's a Leaf town, right? I just don't know if you could do that. I go up to Ottawa all the time for work, and Ottawa only got an NHL franchise back in the 1990s. They hadn't had a team since the 30s before that. And I go up there all the time, and you know who goes to those games? People, you know, who are Leafs fans who just like to see other NHL clubs, you know, like, and the most sought after tickets all season are when the Leafs come to town. And that's, you know, 300 kilometers away, or whatever that is in miles.
Yeah, there's something definitely funny about that. As a longtime suffering Bad News Bears Seattle Mariners fan, I never ever ever have to wonder, are the Yankees in town, are the Red Sox in town, are the Toronto Blue Jays or the Chicago Cubs in town? Because let me tell you, those fans travel really well.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there are people who buy season tickets just so they can resell them to those people for a premium price.
Oh, yeah.
An insane amount of blue jerseys when the Blue Jays are in town.
Yeah, I've heard that the last few times in particular, over the past few years, when the Blue Jays started getting competitive again, they said it was just the entire city of Vancouver, the province of BC, just migrates down and watches the entire, you know, 3 or 4 game set.
Yeah, it's pretty nutty.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've always had a soft spot for the Mariners because they are the expansion cousins, right? They came into the league at the same time the Blue Jays did. And I've always had this sort of affinity for that club as well. You know, and I love Ken Griffey Jr. is my favorite player of all time. I just thought he had the most beautiful swing I've ever seen a baseball player take. And so I definitely was a sort of, you know, they were on my sort of tier of not local teams to cheer for. But man, you're right. Hard luck. Holy moly. That's a history of missed opportunities and failed things. Let's win 112 games and then flame out, you know, just awful.
Yeah, from a what would I rather have? I see people complaining about the Marlins. I'm like, look, I know the ownership does weird things. It actively tries not to win and spends really weird. But guess what? They also do win.
Yeah.
They've won like twice this whole time that the Mariners have like not. So I'll gladly take that over spending lots of bucks and having nothing to show for it.
Well, and the Devil Rays too, or the Rays, right? Like the same thing. Like that team has been just a catastrophe, and yet they've made the World Series like four times or five times in 20 years. Like, yeah.
I'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah, no kidding. But hey, at least you got the Seahawks.
Seahawks end up having to be the good second choice for me, given that the injury bug has just utterly decimated my Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask if you were a Texas sports fan overall, just because you grew up in El Paso.
Yeah, and in NFL being my top choice for sports league, the Cowboys are my number one. And when you're on your second, third, fourth quarterback, because they've all been getting injured, and your defense was terrible to begin with, you're missing, like, you've got people, like, it's like, you know, hey, let's just do whoever shows up to the bar, the 10th caller gets to be the offensive lineman this week.
Wasn't that what they did for the Broncos a couple weeks ago? They were basically like, we'll have a raffle and whoever wins gets to be our quarterback this week.
It was pretty much that. Yeah. COVID has made things wild and crazy. I am in many ways looking kind of forward to the NBA, because they did the COVID thing right with the bubble and the tournament and everything. So,
but then they're coming back and doing things the NFL way a little more now, right? They're going to travel now. They're supposed to cut down travel a little bit, but they're going to travel again. And they're having things like, they wouldn't let the Raptors have home games in Toronto this year. They're the Tampa Bay Raptors, right?
That whole thing and the Blue Jays, I'm a little unclear what's going to happen to them for MLB.
Oh, you mean the Buffalo Jays? The Buffalo Blue Jays?
Yeah, that's really odd to be like exiled from your own home country, which is very strange.
Well, I mean, I got to be honest, I'm kind of glad. Like, we have enough problems. Like, this area is a real hotspot, and we're having a really tough time controlling the spread. The idea of bringing people in who are, you know, and again, it's not like they travel in small groups too. An NFL team is a crazy amount of people traveling. But the next on that list is the baseball teams, where they're traveling like 50 people around from place to place. That's dangerous, right? Like, that's just asking for trouble.
Yeah. I'm thinking about like, wait, so had things changed just a little bit? Like, they got locked on the correct side of the border, given where most of the league is. What would have happened if they'd been in Canada when things started getting locked down?
Yeah.
They may not have been allowed in, which is weird.
Well, it's funny.
Like one way in of like, you come in, you ain't going home. So prepare to live in the U.S.
They were saying that, you know, one of the issues that came up for the Raptors that came out sort of after the season is one of the players for the team who was really good in winning the championship was Marc Gasol, the center, and his family was in Spain while he was in Florida playing inside the bubble recently for the NBA playoffs. And Spain was also really very badly hit by the pandemic, and he couldn't leave and they couldn't leave and he couldn't be with them. And so he was really distracted and struggling with real life while trying to, you know, play the sport that he was being paid to play. And they said that, you know, that's one of the reasons why he kind of had a disappointing playoffs for the Raptors, was that he just, his head was not where on the game, it was with his family, which is what you'd expect. But you know, those kind of things are going to be a challenge in sports. You know, like, life is happening at pretty crazy paces around all these things that people are expecting. You know, oh, we want the entertainment, we want the sports, we want these things. Oh, these are still human beings with families and everything else, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, the NFL is a weird one. Like, I honestly, I cannot even believe, you know, I'm not a huge NFL fan, but I cannot believe that they've gotten through this far without adding a week or adding 2 weeks or just doing some things to mitigate it, because some of the decisions they've made, like forcing Denver to play without a quarterback, forcing the Ravens to play, it almost feels punitive. Like, it almost feels like they're like, well, should have been more careful, get out on the field. Like, it's like teaching kids the lesson or something.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see how the season continues to play out. Again, I wonder if we're going to get a Super Bowl or we're going to get a COVID Bowl in March.
Yeah, I think if they don't start locking stuff down, at least for the playoffs, it is going to be a nightmare. Yeah. They're like, hey, so like the starters can't play? It's like, what?
Yeah,
starters can't play in the Super Bowl. Like, we can't move the bowl. Like, it just doesn't work.
Well, one of the podcasts I listen to, they talk about betting sometimes about sports. I listen to, you know, sports podcasts, and they're saying like this is the craziest gambling year in history, because, you know, how are you supposed to get any kind of understanding of what you're betting on when like teams are being ravaged by illnesses and all these different things? Like, it just, nothing is what it seems, right? And there's no such thing as home field advantage. Again, Seattle used to be like the toughest place on the planet to play a football game, because the Seahawks fans are insane, but there are no fans. So how do you bet on something if you lose that advantage?
Yeah, yeah. Or non-home games like the San Francisco 49ers playing in Glendale, Arizona.
Exactly.
Santa Clara County has locked down all sorts of activity.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and they told them, it was for a long stretch too, right? It was like, you know, 2 months or something, right?
Yeah, it's something like that. Oh, yeah, crazy. Well, you all stay safe.
Yeah.
Don't play professional sports. That's how you get the COVID. So
unless you have unless you're a pitcher with the left hand, then you're fine. That's where the real money is. All right, I'm gonna go. I gotta go get some sleep. Theoretically, yeah. Work tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a thing. Yeah.
All right.
All right. Talk to you later. Talk to you next week, guys.
Bye.